to 94.9 KUOW Seattle. This is Weekday. I'm Marcy Silman. Alan Alda is a man whose face is familiar to literally millions of people. Maybe you know Alda from his role on The West Wing. I grew up watching Alan Alda play Hawkeye Pierce in the television show MASH. My son knows him from his turn as host of the great PBS series Scientific American Frontiers. Alan Alda began his acting career in live theater, and despite forays into television and film, he's returned to live performance time and again over his career. Alan Alda is also a director, and he's a writer. His new book is called Things I Overheard While Talking to Myself. And Alan Alda, it's a pleasure to welcome you to Weekday.
Thank you. Thank you. It's really fun to be here.
You have had a great critical and commercial success as an actor. And when I read about you, you have a loving family, you're a father, you're a grandfather. This book is about a search for meaning in life.
Meaning in my own life.
In your own life. Yeah. Talk about that incident that actually pushed you to think about this more deeply.
Well, I nearly died in South America 4 years ago, October 19th. It's become my new birthday. I actually celebrate my birthday on October 19th now, in addition to the regular birthday. Because I had an emergency operation in the middle of the night, and this skilled surgeon who has now become, his whole family have become our friends, you know, we were really happy that I was alive. I got euphoric, and I wanted to hang on to that feeling that most people get, I think, who get up to the doorway of death and then come back. You get no matter how happy you were before, and I was really happy with my mm-hmm. life, and I was happy trying to accomplish things. But I had this experience in the middle of the night where I started to ask myself, so are you living a meaningful life? And I thought that was an absurd thing to ask myself. I said, what, are you kidding? And then I said, no, if you don't wake up tomorrow. Because I came close to not waking up the next day, not long before that. And I said, if you don't wake up tomorrow, will this have been a meaningful life? And I started to think about all the things in my life that I've lived through that we think gives meaning to your life. And I'm thinking, did that give meaning? Does it continue to?
Well, it's interesting because you were rushed down from you were up with astronomers taping, actually, for the Scientific American series, right?
That's right, yeah.
You were rushed down, you had this emergency surgery, but in reading about you, you actually sound as if even from a very early age, you were trying to do more than sort of just be on stage and be a performer, that you were always trying to do something to make some kind of difference.
Well, I was always curious, and that led to my interest later in life in science. That's mainly what I read. I don't read novels
really?
Much at all. No. But so I'm always grateful when a friend or my wife says, you got to read this novel. And I read the cream of the crop because people are after me to do that. But I don't know why I got interested in trying to do things that I thought outside my work were interesting. And that maybe would help out other people. I don't know what that was, but I did. I found myself marching in the streets, trying to. When I was in my 20s, the thing we marched about then was to try to stop nuclear arms testing.
Mm-hmm.
Even then, I thought, you know, I'm walking in circles in the street, and I'm not really. I don't think I'm really accomplishing much. And in any case, despite that, there came another time when I worked hard for the Equal Rights Amendment. Mm-hmm. For 10 years, I campaigned for that. And I anytime I wasn't in front of the camera, I was out on the road lobbying legislators or talking or, you know, making speeches. But I don't do that anymore. And it's partly because of this thing that happened to me in Chile where I got my life back. I want to get the most juice out of my life that I've decided to just concentrate on the things I really know how to do, writing and acting. And I want to get better at them in the time I have left. And I don't want to be an amateur in politics. I don't really like to do politics. And I haven't spoken. I don't talk about politics in public anymore.
Really?
I haven't for a long time. Yeah.
You grew up in show business, and I was kind of surprised. Usually that deters people from following in their parents' footsteps.
Well, my father wanted to discourage me, and at the same time, he brought me out on stage to work with him. He brought me out when I was 6 months old.
Really?
Yeah. And I was like a joke, you know, the baby they brought on stage in burlesque sketches. And then when I was 9, we used to entertain the troops at the Hollywood Canteen during World War II, and we did Abbott and Costello sketches. So I had a lot of training early on, but most of all, I learned about the profession from watching in the wings. For me, it was the best training ground.
Why did you want to follow, though, in those footsteps?
You know, there was a moment when I was standing in the wings when I was 9 years old, and I was trembling with fright. It was the first time I was going to go out, first time consciously going out on stage to try to entertain people. And as soon as I stepped onto the stage and the spotlight hit me, the trembling stopped and I felt the warmth of the spotlight. And as soon as we started the sketch and I got the first laugh from 1,000 people, there was such a feeling of power and being in control and being at the center of the universe. It's very seductive. And I wanted to be an actor from that moment on. I mean, I can date it right to then.
You got to Broadway relatively early.
Well, I was in my 20s, but I started off with 5 lines in a Broadway play that only lasted a week, and most of my part consisted of climbing up a telephone pole.
I'm sure you were good at it.
They had a telephone pole on stage, and they pretty much only gave me lines so that the audience would notice they had a real telephone pole up there.
Well, what then lured you from live theater to film first? It was film.
Agents and managers. You know, it's show business. So when you go in to be part of the show part of it, you suddenly find out there's a whole other group of people who are interested in the business part of it. And if you have some kind of marketable talent, they're busy marketing that. And then they're busy convincing you that that's a good place to spend your time.
I mean, you did make decisions even relatively early on. I mean, you gave up, sure, money.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was one of these. One of the agents was very avid about getting me into this movie called The Extraordinary Seaman. That's S-E-A-M-A-N.
That's the problem with radio. Huh?
Yeah. And I said, this is a terrible script. Why would I want to do this? And they said, oh, are you kidding? It's a leading part, and it's a very important movie. I said, why is it important? They said, well, look at all these people involved in it. David Niven and friend John Frankenheimer, the director. And I said, but it's still a terrible script. It's not going to be a good movie. Why would I want to? And I had to get out of a play I was in on Broadway. And the producer of the play said, we'll only let you out for those 3 months to make the movie if you give us $50,000, which I didn't have. I had to go into debt to make a terrible movie. And I did because of the pressure from, you know, I wasn't strong enough to withstand that pressure.
Alan Alda's our guest on Weekday This Hour. His book, Things I Overheard While Talking to Myself, is not a memoir. You already wrote a memoir, but it's memoir-esque.
It's memoirish.
Memoirish. That's a good way of putting it. One of the things that you ruminate upon is celebrity and what that does. And you spent 11 years playing a doctor on TV. You know, that old joke, I'm not a doctor, I just play one on TV. Yeah. But people not only came to know you because it was an incredibly popular show, but you and Hawkeye Pierce, the sort of sassy doctor in Korea, became one.
Well, I have had a friend whose husband fell down in the bathroom in the middle of the night, hit his head, and she was panicked and thought, who can I get to come here and medically help him? And I was on the top of her list. And I said the next day, I said, what were you thinking? What was I going to come over and tell him a couple of good jokes? And it is funny how you sort of take on in the public mind this persona that's not yours.
You write about addressing, I think it's your eldest daughter's graduating class in Connecticut, maybe Connecticut College.
Yeah,
and of the many things you told them, you talk about humor and the power of laughter. Do you still think that laughter holds power?
In my work, laughter is very important to me. I don't mean with the audience. I mean with my fellow actors. When I'm doing a play, I try to get together with the other actors for about an hour before each performance, and we make each other laugh.
Really?
Yeah, we make fun of each other. And that warms us up to one another, and we're focused on one another. And when we get out on stage, that energy that we have between us comes out in the terms of the play, in the dialogue of the play.
Even if it's not a comedy?
Yeah, right. Or even if we're playing villains or we're holding each other up at gunpoint. It doesn't matter. It puts you on the other person, and there's nothing like that because the audience sees that connection, and they can't take their eyes off that connection.
We're talking with Alan Alda, and his new book is about advice. And
Well, it's really advice I give to myself. You know, I noticed when I gave advice to kids graduating from college, I was really talking to myself. And now what I've done in this book is gone back and listened to this advice that I was giving myself and seeing if what I can actually get out of it now that I recognize that I was talking to myself.
You, Alan Alda, have probably overheard more things in your life than those of us who haven't had that opportunity to travel the world and meet lots of interesting people. But is there something that it all comes back to for you out of all the things you've done?
Well, you know, what's interesting to me is that I have accomplished a few things in my life. And when I look back and try to think of what gives meaning to my life, it's not the accomplishments. And I noticed when I talked about at the memorials of three friends who died in the same year, who all happened to be well-known, Ossie Davis, Ann Bancroft, and Peter Jennings, all died within a few months of one another. And they were all good friends. And when I spoke about them, I didn't talk much about their worldly accomplishments. I talked about the moments where they touched my life in a very personal way, really mm-hmm. specific moments that are very vivid to me. And that made me think about my own search for meaning, because I think it's fun to try to accomplish something, but the fun of accomplishing it is over when you accomplish it. And it doesn't. When I look back on the accomplishment, it doesn't give me anything.
People in my culture talk about being a mensch, mm-hmm. Which I think translates to man. But it's like being a good
person. Yeah.
And so, what would the components be when you talk about those three friends, or when you look into yourself?
I think when I look into myself, especially when I think about these people who I spoke about when they died, I think, what am I doing that is going to be remembered by somebody else? And I don't think it's going to be, the trophies I got, the awards I got, that's just tinsel on the tree. That's not where the meaning of my life is. It probably there's a moment that I don't even remember talking to a friend or talking to one of my grandchildren that 40 years from now they'll look back on. And that will be my legacy. That'll have made my life meaningful. I have that from a grandfather who was a second marriage that my grandmother had. And he was a very humble person. He was not very smart, and he worked as a day laborer. And he said to me once, you know, he said, you know, that might hurt people's feelings if you talk like that to them. Maybe you ought to think about that. He was so gentle with me. I still remember that moment. And it helped me grow into a better person. And he wouldn't have remembered that he said that.
Huh. It's reminding me of, I think it's Zen Buddhists who talk about living in the moment.
Yeah, I know. They stole that from me.
Amy emails, she said, yesterday I caught myself talking out loud and I thought, I don't overhear the stuff I say to myself. Most of the time I don't want to hear what I have to say, even to myself. So she wants to know how you begin to listen and care to listen to your own thoughts and then pay attention to them.
Well, you know, I've really been lately getting very interested in being aware of what's happening now. And when I do that, I hear my own thoughts more. I hear other people's thoughts too, but I'm more in touch with my unconscious, I think, which is really good, because I think most of the important work that's done in our heads is done at an unconscious level.
Do you think that we spend too much time babbling?
No, babbling is good. Babbling is Babbling is
glad like, to know that.
It's like a, you know, chimp sitting on a limb, just grooming each other. I think most of our talk is just grooming. You know, I'm here, you there, how you doing? I'm fine. Let me take that little gnat off your head.
Alan Alda, thanks very much.
Thank you. I had a really good time. Thanks.
This is Weekday on KUOW. I'm Marcy Silman in for Steve Scherr.